So we're here with journalist Angela Baca, and give us some of the outlets you're writing for now, because I was going to do an intro, but I don't remember exactly which one you're...
I had been doing some book editing projects mostly for like the last year. I worked on two different books. So I've been very sparsely freelancing, and right now I'm just working on investigative pieces.
All right.
Slow and long, so...
Well, you're one of my favorite writers, and I'm glad you stopped by today, because we were just discussing... We're just hanging out here discussing our backgrounds and some of the activism that we've covered, and we got around to the state of Utah, which, you know, I grew up in Idaho and I was a baptized Mormon, and it's kind of interesting to me how quickly Utah has been moving on the issue of medical marijuana. They're the first state to pass a cannabidiol law in March of 2014, and then right after that, boom, all these other southern states and midwestern states are passing cannabidiol laws. And I just... We got to discussing that, and Angela was telling me here about how it has really blossomed in Utah on an underground level, kind of something that was happening throughout the Mormon Church. And give us a little bit about that. What is the genesis of this revolution of marijuana in Utah?
Well, I guess part of it is that I've always been very out of the closet with my own use, and I really have made a point of talking about it with strangers everywhere I go.
Yeah.
And you know, especially, you know, because you travel a lot, when you're on an airplane, people always end up asking you, like, what you do, or why you're on the plane, why you're going to this place, and so sometimes I just decide to be bold and go right for it, like, hey, I'm going to Missouri to write an investigative piece about a marijuana bill, or Utah to do it, right? And I've had really interesting conversations with people, because I found that most people actually want to talk about marijuana, but they haven't really had somebody who will talk about it with them.
Yeah.
So when they get the opportunity to sit with someone like me, they just will fire off questions, and I'll sit there and answer them. The other reason I feel like I'm kind of a good ambassador is that I'm clean cut and I have Crohn's disease, which is a really serious illness, and it's led to me losing a third of my colon at this point.
Mm.
And when I bring that up, nobody wants to argue with me about the merits of marijuana.
Sure.
So when I was living in Utah, which I did for a period while my husband was getting his grad degree, I just kind of made a point of talking about it really loud everywhere I went, or talking about it with people in public, and I basically found that everybody else supported it. And so when I got involved with activist networks there, it was an easy thing to move forward, because I already knew that everybody else wanted this. They just needed to know that everybody else wanted it.
This is the kind of thing where people are afraid to mention it, but once they do, they find everybody else is pretty much on the same page.
That's happened everywhere I've gone to. Every time I've gone to a conservative state in general, I've always had this same kind of bold talk about marijuana, because I am the perfect person for who's going to go after me. Like I said,
right.
I'm a serious case here, and I've just been so bold about talking about it that I've found that everybody else is like that. And I feel like we kind of have created some other networks in other states. When I visited, and when I say we, I'm talking about Ed, because I traveled with Ed Rosenthal to Missouri to do some activist work.
Yeah.
A couple times. I found that we have actually brought people together who didn't realize that the other people in the room were like them, even though they already knew each other. And so talking about it has brought people out of the woodworks.
Yeah, there's it's an interesting phenomenon. I remember back in 2007, Minnesota was moving forward on medical marijuana at the time, and they did a poll and they asked people, you know, do you support medical marijuana? And they found that like 3 out of 4 did. But then they asked them, do you think your neighbor supports medical marijuana? And they said about 3 out of 4 didn't. So it is that culture of fear that people are afraid to mention what they feel. But once they get together, they realize that they all are on the same page on this. And you were telling me about how this is happening through the Mormon Church as well, not at an official level in any way, but that the people themselves within the church are trying to help each other through that Mormon welfare network.
Right, and you and I were talking about that, because anybody who's familiar with the Mormon religion and church understands that everything kind of is centered around the ward, really. And in your neighborhood, you have like your local ward, which is your church, and you go there every Sunday, and you know all of your neighbors, and you guys all help each other. You see each other regularly throughout the week because of assigned jobs in the community. So there's already this network where people are talking to each other and seeing each other and knowing their neighbors and helping their neighbors. So as medical marijuana has kind of grown on the internet or on TV, they've all seen the same things that we see, and they've had a demand for it as well. So there's been kind of a smuggling network called the Mormon Carpool that goes from Los Angeles to Salt Lake.
Where Jell-O optional.
Right, where moms of, like, the parents of sick children are smuggling weed from stop to stop. Like, one of them takes it from this leg to this leg. to make sure that the weed gets to the kids who need it because it's so much safer and better for them. Yeah. So there's already these crazy underground networks, and it's very, very quiet. And on the down low, of course, because they don't want to lose their children, where they're smuggling the weed around. They just didn't realize everybody else around them was in favor either until stuff started taking off.
Wow. So what's the prognosis then? Because I know Utah has been talking about expanding this. Wasn't there a recent expansion?
Well, here's the big situation with it, and I see this happening in a lot of states. Legislators understand that the public are in demand of this for all uses, industrial hemp, legalization, medical. The public understands this, and legislators know that, but it's about controlling it. Senator Mattson, who is running the medical marijuana bill in Utah, was a patient himself, and he understood this from a patient's point of view. And so he refused to give up access to raw bud. He said, fine, you guys can ban home grow if you're going to be conservative like that. You can do all these other crazy controlling things that I don't agree with. But from my understanding, the best way for patients is to have access to lots of different varieties of raw bud. And we can ban smoking, that's fine. They can take it home and vaporize it, but they need access to that. And that was why he continued to be voted down, was that flower access was there.
Mm-hmm.
So what it's about in Utah, at the end, every time they brought up an argument about it, we countered it so hard, brought in the right expert, beat them down on it, or brought in a very sad story
sure. To
put in front of them, and we were winning. And all they had against us was the reefer addicted rabbits, which was, you know...
That was the famous case where, was it, the one of the DEA...
Yeah, so we were sitting in a hearing when it was going through committee before it went to the Senate, and they brought in the DEA's witness against our case for medical marijuana, and he said that there were marijuana grows that they had purged in the hills of Utah, where they saw rabbits who had been eating the weed, and they were just so high they wouldn't run away. And like that was... The best they could do to counter this marijuana bill was the stoned rabbits.
Stone rabbits.
So our web guy, Jared, and I decided to take that and put it through some of our underground networks, and I passed it to a mutual friend of ours who is really popular with Leap. He passed it on to the Washington Post. And uh-huh. So they posted the big, long article with the quotes of it about the reefer-addicted rabbits, and then that traveled all over the world.
Yes, it did.
Really fun, and why we kind of got attention in Utah, and then we started pumping out the Mormon stories. So.
Wow. And you were also telling me about the woman who helped to shepherd this bill through the Utah legislature and how she did such a fantastic job on this.
There are two women, really.
Okay.
It was Tennille Farr and Christine Stenquist. Christine Stenquist was someone who had been working with religious lobbying organizations in the area, had a brain tumor and fibromyalgia, and had been in bed for 20 years because she was so sick and had gotten out of bed and started weaning off medications because she was using cannabis illegally and she wanted to promote it. The other woman was Tennille Farr, and Tennille Farr is a Mormon woman who was a housewife in Spanish Fork, Utah, had 5 children. When she was pregnant with her 5th, she was diagnosed with lymphoma. And a friend of hers, through this Mormon network we were talking about, suggested that she go spend some time in Colorado and California and juice cannabis and take cannabis oil. She delivered a healthy baby and went home. As soon as she went home, she stopped using it. Her cancer was not yet in remission, and she didn't want to break the law because she was LDS. And so that was her point up there. She was at the Capitol every day with a 6-week-old baby. She was nursing in meetings with the drafters. Like, she was there every day. And these two women were pouring their guts out to some of these legislators and crying and telling them these stories. And they understood it. And they kept changing their reasons for why they were going to vote no, which I thought was pretty fucked up. But, you know.
So their status now, they're still just cannabidiol oil at this time, and
the CBD bill, as I understand, is sunset by now. It was passed in 2014, or went into effect in 2014, and was supposed to sunset in the summer of 2016, and they failed to pass something to replace that. So I don't even know that CBD is still legal. They may or may not have done something to cover the people who are using it already. I do know there's already Epidiolex trials going on at the University of Utah, though, so that kind of covers a lot of the people who had wanted that bill there. Senator Mattson retired from the Utah State Senate and is doing his own private business now. He knew he was going to retire this year anyway because he needed to take care of his chronic pain problems, and he just didn't want to be in this legislature forever. He tried the bill twice. He refused to give up flower. Of course, it never passed, despite how big it got and how much support kept coming out for it. The groups that are there now are trying to do a citizens' initiative. I don't know how far it's moving at this point, but there's no legislator in the Utah legislature right now who's willing to really champion it. Mm. And I don't think anyone ran anything this year. And people are trying really hard for that voter initiative, but it's a hard thing to do in Utah because you need a certain percentage of every county.
Right.
And Utah's 90-some percent of the population is in two or three counties right around the Salt Lake area, but there's these counties in the far reaches of the state where 10 people live, and
right.
you'd have to somehow get them to sign something, too.
Yeah, it's they do this in a lot of the initiative states to force a more geographic distribution so that you can't. Same thing in Idaho, you know.
It just makes it more difficult, though, to pass things.
Right, and it yeah, also have to question, why is that even necessary? Shouldn't a majority matter regardless of where they're concentrated?
that's also an argument against the Electoral College.
Well, there we go. That's another thing we ought to be getting rid of. Well,
as a native Californian, yes, I agree. We should get rid of the Electoral College now.
Yeah. What was the Trump people were saying, you know, if you take California out, Trump won by a landslide.
And so, if you take California out, this country's no longer great. So there you go.
Hey, if you disregard 12% of the voters, sure, all sorts of things change. Well, I thank you.
The sixth largest economy in the world.
Sixth, yeah. That's right. And thanks to Britain Brexiting, actually, mm-hmm. raised us up a couple notches.
Lovely.
Yeah. Well, Angela, it's been great having you here and discussing what's going on here in Utah. I sure hope that this this Mormon network of people that are so involved with the medical side of things can help make that come to electoral fruition through this through a medical marijuana amendment, a medical marijuana initiative. I don't know who to...
Honestly, the only way they're going to get something passed in medical in Utah, if it's going to happen before something happens federally, is if the people get serious about organizing a vote out of these legislators who've been the stalwarts against it. Because we all know their motivations. The main ones were a pharmacist and a doctor. Mm-hmm. It's pretty clear why some of these people are opposing the law, and people need to get organized and throw them out. It's a small enough state that it doesn't take that much effort.
Right.
And I think people need to understand that when you're in a small state, you have that power in a way people in California or New York don't.
Right.
So,
yeah, never underestimate the power of a group of Mormon women to change the world.
That is the truth.
Thanks so much, Angela, and good luck on all of the investigative pieces that you're working on.
Thank you.